independent in thought and punk rock in life. It's the Chad Benson Show.
Despite savoring the sweet taste of success as a chef, author, and TV show host, in a 2016 episode of Parts Unknown, Bourdain opened up about depression.
I'd like to be happy. I should be happy. I have, incredible luck.
But he wasn't happy. And Friday, it came to a head, and he took his own life. Last week, Kate Spade took her life. Suicide rates are up tremendously over the last decade or so. And why? That's the question. Why? Joining us now is mindfulness-based psychotherapist Dr. Denise Fournier. And you listen to him there, Doc, and you say to yourself, you probably heard it a lot as a person who deals with this, that they should be happy. They want to be happy. They're just not happy. Why is that?
Well, generally speaking, there is far less of a relationship between the inner world and the outer world than we might recognize. You know, we have a tendency to think if the external circumstances can just get aligned, then I can be happy. And this is sort of the setup for all of us. And those of us, even those of us who don't struggle with mental illness, we know from our own experience that this is not necessarily true, that we might have all our external circumstances align, and still, if the inner world isn't attended to, we might not experience the fullness of that and find joy and happiness and satisfaction like we might expect. And this is all the more true for people who suffer from depression and other mental illnesses. This is a person like Kate Spade, Anthony Bourdain. He has everything. He's got everything that our culture builds us up to believe will be the healing to all of our worldly woes. And certainly this is a person who decided to take his life. So certainly those two things were not in relationship, you know, the inner experience and the outer circumstances. You know, chemically, the brain of a depressed person, looks a particular way and sets the person up to have a very difficult time experiencing happiness. You know, hearing that clip is heartbreaking. Of course he wanted to be happy and couldn't. And this is the reality of mental illness. This is the reality of depression. And it also says a lot about the reality of the human experience. It's something I see all the time in my practice.
You talk about that, and I'm sure you talk about people who have been suicidal, and I'm sure in your practice, you work in this business long enough as you do, and you deal with people who are in this conflicting, fighting world, and eventually something triggers it, and they do try to commit suicide, or they do commit suicide. In some way, shape, or form, though, I think a lot of people think that they've always wanted to do it, but the reality is that they're fighting it. They don't want to do it. But eventually it feels like it's too much for them. Would you say that most people, even when they do commit suicide, there is more than a big conflict inside of them? There's a war going on because they do want to be happy. They just don't think they ever will be.
I'm so glad you said that. I think that is absent from conversations about suicide. So I'm really grateful that you have shed light on that. It's true. People who are suicidal, people even at the point of making the decision to end their lives, want desperately to live, and they want to live. They want to believe that there is hope. They want to believe that there's a possibility that they'll overcome the darkness, that they'll overcome the desperation and despondence. So these are not people who have sort of foreclosed on this and decided that they want to die. They just want to stop suffering. And in that echo chamber, the complex sort of reasoning of depression and of suicidality creates this sort of echo chamber that makes it really difficult to grasp on to any sense of hope for the future. But certainly, this is why intervention is so helpful. Certainly with a broadening of perspective, even the slightest little glimmer of hope that gets in might be the difference between a person ending their lives and being able to hang on just a little bit.
Talking to Denise, Dr. Denise Fournier, she's a mindfulness-based psychotherapist. You know, Doc, when you look at this, and I'm sure as you've gone over time, there are some people out there where I can help this person, and you go out there and you really put it. And then there are some people that somewhere along the line where they switch off, and you think to yourself, because last week Kate Spade's sisters basically said it wasn't if but when this was going to happen, and this they were not surprised by this. And I think a lot of people that are around people who are depressed who eventually do commit suicide, very rarely is it a surprise to everybody. Maybe a few people people in the family, but by and large, it's not a surprise to people. What are those warning signs?
Sure. Well, there are a lot of them. I mean, the first is, of course, the classic symptoms of depression are a warning sign, critical decrease in energy that makes it difficult for people to carry out the tasks of daily living, withdrawing, isolating socially, major changes in sleep and eating patterns, generally depressed mood, sadness, feelings of guilt. Those are all the sort of classic symptoms of depression, and those certainly are warning signs for a person who might be isolating and reaching a point of depression that begins to include thoughts of suicide. Sometimes people are vocal about not wanting to be here anymore, not wanting to live anymore, finding it too difficult, feeling hopeless, feeling like there is no relief or no end to their suffering. Sometimes people who are vulnerable and supported by others might speak openly about these things. Those are absolutely warning signs. People giving away their possessions, not planning for the future, not seeing a future for themselves, not and anticipating any sort of upcoming events as though they're going to be a part of it. People saying goodbye. Those are quite dramatic, but they're all within the picture of what these warning signs are. And for those of us who are paying attention to this conversation, this is something where we will do well to draw our attention to, is what are these warning signs? So that's, you know, just sort of the broad picture of what some of those are.
When I look at all of these things, you know, that have happened over the last, you know, well, several years, because it has been ramping up. We've talked about it in the past, and that this is, you know, much like what's going on with the opioid crisis, that there has been a suicide crisis. How much of this is long-term depression and compared to somebody who has a bad couple months and then something bad happens to them, and it's more of an immediate thing that you know, that happens, rather than somebody who builds up over time? And you can see the depression, you could see the battles they have, like Kate Spade, Anthony Bourdain. It was well known that he had struggles in his life, where somebody who maybe it's more of a knee-jerk reaction over a bad situation.
Well, it can be both. The reality is, the truth is that suicide occurs not exclusively within the context of major depressive disorder or a long-term struggle with depression, other mental illnesses, or addiction. There can be situational, circumstantial factors that would lead a person to the same kind of hopelessness, to the same kind of sense that there is no future to anticipate and that the solution is to end their lives. We've heard about cases where people become so despondent because of circumstances that befall them when there's no history of mental illness otherwise, and that person reaches the same sort of conclusion. And so I think that this is really a reminder, when we think about this, that this is something that occurs in the context of mental illness and depression and addiction and a long battle that we might be present to in a person, that it also could be a circumstantial, situational sort of thing. This really is a call for us to be looking out for each other, to be observing the people in our lives, being connected to the people in our lives in such a way that if we see someone struggling either with a long-term mental illness or with the circumstances of their lives, that we can stay connected and close enough to them to be able to support them and hopefully deter them from carrying that out.
Why are we seeing such a massive rise right now? I know that among, women, white women, especially, 40 plus, there has been a huge rise in suicide and for men as well, but nothing like women. Why are we now seeing this massive jump in today's world where, in 1999, we look back and it really started to come down. But over the last 5-10 years, there's been this like an epidemic, an explosion of it, especially when, with a lot of people who you look and you think, well, they've got a lot of things going for them. Why are we seeing this right now at such an alarming rate?
Yeah. Well, I want to say first, celebrity deaths draw our attention to these subjects, and it can be a really useful and productive thing. But we need to keep in mind that suicide is much more prevalent than we might be aware of until we are, you know, sort of faced with things like this and having to have these conversations. Close to 50,000 people a year commit suicide in the U.S. It's now the 10th leading cause of death in our country. And that's a pretty staggering figure. I think it's important, you know, and I'm glad you're bringing this up, for us to look at this at the micro level and the macro level as well, to look at this at the level of the individual. And that's often what we do, you know, when we hear about a celebrity death. In this case, you know, unfortunately, Kate Spade and Anthony Bourdain are the subject of these conversations this week. And so we're sort of taking this myopic, individualistic approach and talking about them and their lives and what could have led them to it. And I think that's important because some people can extract material from that will help them at the individual level, but we also need to be looking at this at a cultural level, at a societal and collective level. We have never been more connected than we are now with the technology available to us. And paradoxically, but perhaps not surprisingly, we have never been more disconnected and depressed as a culture than we are right now. And I think it's time for us to take a really close look at what we are being sold on as the solution to our woes, as the sort of panacea to all of our troubles. You know, that there's this certain amount of material wealth or possessions or status that we are sort of built up to believe will cure us of any difficulties that we have. And so we sort of step onto, you know, what social scientists call the hedonic treadmill, where we work and we work and we work and we drive ourselves and we push ourselves to acquire and attain, in part because we have to, and in part because we're told we're supposed to. And so we exhaust ourselves and we deplete ourselves. And just as soon as we've reached, you know, one level of status or attainment, then the bar gets pushed out even further. And it's an impossibility. And we wear ourselves out and we disconnect ourselves from each other. We sort of have our heads down. We numb ourselves with our technology. You know, we withdraw from our relationships. We pull away from all the things that would be life-giving and life-sustaining to us, like our connections with other people, like our connections with ourselves, with the earth, with all the things that perhaps we once knew as human beings. We're so removed from it at this point. And our technology and the platforms that we use to engage with each other are perpetuating this. So I think there's a lot for us to take a look at here. Certainly, you know, a lot to say in the format that you and I have today. But there are some really important cultural things for us to be taking a look at in terms of, you know, what we sell ourselves on, what we believe life is about, and how we conduct ourselves.
Interesting. And again, a topic that I think everybody needs to pay attention to, especially today in age, today's age. I appreciate you coming on today, Dr. Denise Fournier right there, mindfulness-based psychotherapist. I appreciate you coming on and discussing this tough topic. Maybe we'll have you on for something a little bit more entertaining next time.
Thanks so much. I appreciate it. And I appreciate you opening this discussion. Thanks so much.
Thank you. At Chad Benson Show is your Twitter, CHADBENSON. Chad at ChadBensonShow.com.